Coming up next on Ham Nation, we've got a huge show. We're going to tell you about the AM rally results. We're going to do it live from W1AW and their big broadcast AM transmitter. Randy will be here. We'll have Dr. T. We'll have Smoke and Solder. We'll have a bunch of stuff, and you're not going to want to miss it. That's coming up next right here on Ham Nation.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
This episode of Ham Nation is brought to you by ICOM. For more information, visit icomamerica.com/hamnation and by DX Engineering. DX Engineering offers practically everything you need to outfit your shack, plus the fastest shipping in the industry. Most in-stock items ship the same day, Monday through Friday until 10 p.m. Eastern. For more information, visit dxengineering.com/hamnation.
This is Ham Nation, episode number 391, February 27th, 2019. AM rally results from ARRL headquarters.
Hello, everybody. I'm K9EID, Bob Heil, and you're watching Ham Nation, which is a show about amateur radio. Tonight, it's a very special show because we have some great guests and some great equipment. But I want to let you know a little bit about what else is happening. Don is on tonight. He'll be with us. And Dr. T, I think, is with us. And I'll talk about it a little bit. Valerie is not here because she's on her way to the Grand Cayman. We'll talk about that later. Ooh, Amanda's wow. here watching the chat room. So we're all full attended, that's for sure. George and Randy are getting the soldering irons cranked up. But before we get to all of that, we're going to take a trip out east, and we're going to bring in Bob Allison, WB1GZM. He is at the headquarters of the ARRL. Hi, Bob. How are you? You doing good?
Yes, very good, Bob. Good to be on your show. It's an honor to be here, and thank you very much for the opportunity.
Yeah, we want to learn more about what that is behind you, of course, that big gates. But now, get ready, everybody. Here's Steve, WA1QIX. Steve and this incredible station. How are you doing, Steve? Thanks for being here.
I'm doing very well, Bob. Wonderful to be here. And we have the results of the 2019 AM Rally, which, if anybody doesn't know, was an operating event that encourages people to get on the air on AM using any kind of equipment at all. As long as it gets on AM, you're good. And this was the biggest year ever. So I'll just go. Do you want me to go through the results real quick?
Yeah, let's go through the whole thing. You guys take over and tell us more about the great AM rally. It was so much fun.
It was a great event. It took place the first weekend in February. And this year, just to sort of give some teaser numbers here, we had, excuse me for a second, I've got my tablet here, I've got some of the numbers here. We had 970 participants in the AM rally. 970 people participated in the AM rally insofar as that they were making contacts during the event. That's a lot of people. And we had over 2,440 contacts, so that's individual QSOs during the AM rally. I'll just give you some numbers. 108 people actually sent in logs, so all these numbers that I'm getting were only from 108 logs. That's about 12% of the people who participated sent in logs. So that's a pretty staggering amount of folks on the rally. It's definitely our biggest one yet. The AM rally's been going on for about 8 years or so. But this was definitely the biggest year ever. So just real quick, the so-called winner, it's more of an operating event, but we do encourage people to send in logs. So scroll that down, please, and you can get to the go on. Those are all the log files sent, and we had 108 logs. So the event organizers, which is myself, WA1QIX, and Bob was operating from W1AW, amongst other people. We don't participate in the, we can't win. we're here to help people get points, to talk to people, to encourage people to get on AM, help them tune up their transmitters, and so on and so forth. But as you can see, looking at the overall results, W7A Paul had a staggering score of 254. He really made an amazing effort, although not as compared to Bob. If you look up top there, 397 contacts made by W1AW. Bob Allison made the lion's share of those, but other operators were involved, myself included. Jerry K1GUP from Maine was second place. K0SF Steve out there in Minnesota. W5JAY, my friend Jay, over in Arkansas. And Stephanie KX3K down in Pennsylvania. So those are the overall results. Do you mind scrolling it up a bit more? The other way, sorry. And I want to get to the categories. The nice thing about the AM rally is that if you look at a little bit more, so we see like category A5 and so on and so forth, we have categories because not everybody's running a kilowatt. Now, power level 5 is 250 watts up to the legal limit, and category A is standard vacuum tube amateur classic equipment. By far, group A, in other words, classic amateur tube equipment, was the biggest category. There were the most number of people running in category A, which shows you most of the equipment on AM is still classic or even vintage vacuum tube equipment. However, scroll up a little bit more, please. Category B, you can see, is homebrew vacuum tube equipment, also a good showing there. But category C is a close second to category A, and category C is commercially built solid state equipment, your ICOM 7300s and your Yaesu FT101s and so on and so forth. That's the second largest category. So people are slowly migrating toward the modern equipment, and that shows up in category C. Category D is homebrew solid state, and that actually shows you that there are some people doing that. In category D, they built their own solid state transmitters. Category E is hybrid commercial, like an FT101 has tubes and transistors in it. And category G are converted AM broadcast transmitters. So there were several in category G. And I don't know if we had anybody in category H. H, just one, that's military equipment, category H. W9GT is running an old federal transmitter. I think it's the only one in the world that's actually still operating. Category I are SDRs, software-defined radios. So that's the kind of equipment that we've got out there. Everybody is running everything on AM. And that's what the event was for, was to promote people getting on AM. Can you scroll up just a little bit more, please? I'm sorry, the other one, yeah. Now, you can see by band, obviously, the most popular band is 80 meters. It always has been and always will be the most popular amateur band. And below that is some statistical data. What kind of rigs? Well, the ICOM 7300 was the most popular commercial transmitter, with homebrew rigs still the most popular overall transmitter type. We can see there were 51 people running Rangers, 28 Flex 5000s, 23 Valiants, a lot of people running 811 tubes, 813s. And this data is all available to peruse, you know, more closely at your leisure. The website is amrally.com. And either during this broadcast or shortly after this broadcast, myself or Clark will be posting the link to that webpage that we were just looking at, and the results will be there for everybody to see. But we waited. We did not publish these results or preliminary release any data. So this is the first time this data has been heard from. It was a wonderful event. I personally had the privilege of operating down at W1AW with Bob. It's a wonderful experience, and I really enjoyed it, and looking forward to next year's event. Bob Allison, you got something to say about this?
You betcha. Well, first off, we had an absolute great time here at W1AW. We're actually located inside the laboratory here, And we had operators, Clark, N1BCG, Steve operated here, WA1QIX, Brian, KB3WFV, Rob, N1ALF, and Larry, WA1LGQ, operated W1AW. So behind me here is a Gates BC1T transmitter. Now, this came via the National Capital Radio and Television Museum of Bowie, Maryland. They had this available, and they contacted us. They also contacted another museum here locally, which I'm part of, the Vintage Radio and Communications Museum of Connecticut. So we worked out a little deal with them, and we've got to share this transmitter. They own it, and they maintain it, so there's really no conflict, and the ARL membership money is not being spent on this transmitter at all. It's actually owned by the museum. So we get to promote the museum here. And, of course, up at the museum where I am every Saturday as a tour guide, we promote the ARRL. And we've encouraged new people to get into amateur radio and had a lot of fun. Anyway, back to the event, the AM Rally. 397 contacts were made here in 23 states. And our best... our best distance was out to California. We had WX6J, I believe it was. I got it written down here. Yeah, there it is. WJ6W, okay? WJ6W in Tarzana, California. We worked that with that Gates transmitter. It runs very, very nicely. Again, we got this from the Bowie, Maryland Museum, National Capital Radio and Television Museum. And the guys up at the Vintage Radio and Communications Museum of Connecticut restored this transmitter, which originally came out of Page, Arizona. Played country music, running at a kilowatt all the time out in the desert. And when we got it, it was still full of Arizona red dirt. But somebody rescued it and trailered it on its back all the way across the country to Maryland. And then we went down, picked it up, and brought it here. And the guys up at the museum came down here and restored it to its original broadcast condition on 1230 kilohertz. Then we turned it over to our local expert, WA1HLR, Tim Smith. He's out of Skowhegan, Maine, and Tim is probably the best expert on broadcast transmitters that I know of. And he came down here, and he worked on this and converted it to the 75-meter AM band. It'll also work on 160, too. Tim did a great job, and we made a video of it. So what I want you to do is go to YouTube and type in the search box, WA1HLR, and W1AW. Type in those two things in the YouTube box, and you'll see Tim Smith in a white coat. No, it's not a. It's not one of those coats that tie in the back. It's actually one of our lab coats. You gave that. You gave that to Tim as an honor of merit for the work that he did with us here. And Tim got this going, and we rigged up a push to talk switch with this thing. And imagine this transmitter went through thousands of cycles on off with a push to talk switch, which is a broadcast engineer's nightmare. You'd never want to turn a transmitter on and off like that, but yet this transmitter took it and did a great job with it. And we had a big signal. And unfortunately, when you do have a really big signal, you have a lot of 25-watt stations on AM trying to get to us. So I want to personally apologize. The fact that we couldn't work everybody. It was just impossible. And
there's Timmy.
I've never seen such a huge pileup on 75-meter AM ever as with this transmitter over here. And so I would say that this has been a really great success. I have to mention also that we have a fine museum right off the lab here, and it's the ARRL Heritage Museum. And inside of it, we have a working 32V3 and a 75A4. We use that on 40 meters. And then we have another room we have, which is normally call sign W1HQ. It's our staff station. And we put that station on 10-meter AM and also 6-meter AM. And we have quite a bit of 6-meter activity locally here on AM on 50.4. And so to all of you out there watching Ham Nation right now, I'd like you to consider 6 meter AM. Come on, everybody has Goonie boxes and lunch boxes out there. You see them on eBay. They always sell. They go for a little bit of money. But, you know, this is so much fun. Look, I got one right here. See, check it out.
And everybody's got cable nowadays, there.
Oh,
too.
Yeah, look at that. See, now we put some of these on the air. It's a lot of fun. We actually made some 2 meter AM contacts right here. And that was fun, too. So next AM rally, try out your Goonie box. If you can't get on HF, maybe you can get on 6 or 2 meters. Try out that lunch box, your old Gonset communicator, your Eldecos, your Lafayettes. Come, put them on 6 or 2 meters, and you'll have a blast there, too. And plenty of room for lots of bandwidth and fidelity. So it's a great band to experiment with, too. And let's see, if there's anything else I'd like to say is I want to personally thank Steve and Clark and Brian. Brian, KB3WFV. Brian did a great job operating here, too. He was a real natural, and he has a very, very distinct voice, which came through loud and clear. Mm-hmm. So I really want to personally thank the crew here to get us on the air and have a great operating event and to promote AM. Now, I want to make sure we put all the past history behind us. It's very important to do that. Remember this always, that the ARRL promotes modes that all radio amateurs enjoy. So there's some really obscure modes out there. And, well, AM's not really that obscure. It's an old legacy mode, and it's still very popular. And the ARRL will promote AM. Okay? This is in the 1960s. There's no AM wars anymore. That was a long time ago. Forget that. We're never going to bring that up again. And we're happy with AM here, with W1AW and the ARRL. So we have a great time promoting the mode. And wow, what a bunch of cool radios I got to work. I don't know how many PC610s, a TCS set. Remember, everybody didn't send in their logs. So, but just a sheer number of some of the really coolest old radios that I remember the old timers running when I was a kid, young novice, hearing those old beautiful transmitters. Yeah, we got to hear them again on the AM rally. So next year, don't miss it. It's cool. It's new technology because of the solid state stuff that's out there, like what Steve runs, WA1QIX, classy homebrew. Fantastic. Or you could run something really, really old like a command set station, ARC5s, TCS sets, even older. How about an old Thoradson transmitter? I know there's some of those out there, right? But yeah, you got a nice mix of old and new. And that's what this laboratory is, too. It's a mix of old and new. We got the screen room, the most modern test equipment. And, you know, we snuck into our product reviews information about AM. And the manufacturers pay attention to that. So hopefully through the years, over the last 10 years or so, manufacturers see more and more stuff mentioned about AM. And they realize that it's important. And now look what we have on the air. Really good sounding AM transmitters with a new era of equipment. Those new SDR radios. Wow. Fantastic stuff. And they work on AM. So a nice mixture of old and new. And that's what's cool about AM. Over.
Over. Wow. Great job. Great job. Well, one of the things that I want to say is that there's a lot of guys figure, well, we can't get on because we don't have the gear. Yes, you do. Push the AM button. You'd be surprised how good your transmitter sounds. You probably never did it before. Do it and join us. I want to also tell you that next year, January 31st to February the 3rd. Mark those dates down. That's when the rally will happen. I think I'm right on that, Steve. Is that
you
correct?
Are right. 31st. It's the first weekend of February again, but it begins that Friday night. Yes.
Be right. There. Aloha.
Bob, did you want to talk about the AM windows at all?
Well, that's also something we need to talk about because there are still a lot of the newer guys that don't realize there are windows and they're not publicized very much. And we need to do that because there still are some areas that are having some difficulties with some of the guys operating in the AM window. I think we have one of the charts up. I think Victor has that. If not, you can go to the ARRL site and put in frequencies, and they will show you where
it
is.
Yeah, Bob, can I comment on that?
Absolutely. There it is right there. Yeah, okay, take there over.
All right. Yep. So the AM windows are good. They're a gathering place. I want to make sure that people understand that's where you're going to find AM activity. However, there are times where that AM window is very crowded and there's a lot of space, especially down the band on 75 meters these days. So, you know, just always be a courteous operator. Listen first. Make sure there's nobody either side of you. Remember, you have two sidebands on AM. Just listen first. Make sure that the frequency is clear. And AM is a mode that you can run anywhere that there's a voice frequencies or anywhere where voice mode is allowed. So AM windows are important because that's the congregation place. But you can move off of that as long as you're courteous, just like you would with any other mode.
That's right. Absolutely. I have my Gonsa communicator up here ready to go.
We call that a Goonie-less Goonie.
Yes.
Because it doesn't have the green
That's
eye
right,
on
a Goonie
it.
Bird.
Yeah. I got one of those yellow ones in my office, you know, ready for civil defense and the end of the world. So, hey, those things work great. It's amazing.
Well, I really appreciate both of you being here. You've done stellar work. My gosh, all of the things that were put together. Oh, Steve. And it really is also Brian and some of the others. So thanks those very, very much. And we're going to have you back here kind of regularly and give us a report on what all is going on at the league. I'm a life member of the league. I joined
Thank
the
you,
league
Bob.
When I was about 20 years old, and I guess it's really paid off. But if our viewers, if you're not aware, the things are happening at the ARRL that they aren't the old school they used to be, let me tell you, because I was very much opposed to some of the things they did some decades ago, but not anymore. It's really cool. So check it out, and we'll talk more about that. By the way, Bob, I have this made out to you. I'll get it in the mail.
All right.
Thanks so very much. Gordo, did you have anything that you wanted to say to the guys?
Well, I heard W1AW. I was using a Bendix Marine converted AM marine radio that I grew up adjusting for boat owners. And I heard a weak signal on the 75-meter band. And sure enough, it was W1AW. But I guess they couldn't hear my 15 watts, even Ooh. Though I jacked the voltage up to 15.2 to try and get maybe 16 watts. Next year, I'll be there.
All right. We'll be listening for you, Gordon.
We'll be listening for you for sure. Thank you very much. It was wonderful.
Well, thanks. Thanks to you, Steve. And a special thanks to the ARRL and you, Bob, and that good old Gates. And we appreciate all. And we'll be pushing EOAM buttons on all this stuff. That's for sure. So
Way
long,
to go.
7-3. We'll
Bye
see you real soon. We'll have to have Timmy back on with you. Well, mm-hmm. One of the things I wanted to say before we get moving forward here is Valerie and Jerry just took off to Grand Cayman, and they're going to be operating on 14 megahertz. You'll have to look around on 20 meters for them. And her new call down there, or a call down there, is ZF2VH. So be looking for her, and you'll be able to catch her voice. I know you will. And she's going to be back real shortly. We're kind of looking forward to that. And in closing my piece here, there's another little thing happening this weekend. This is cool. It's the Novice Roundup, the Novice Rig Roundup. And what's so cool about this is that these are old rigs that we used as novices. Not to say you can't get in there with them, but please get on and work some of the folks that are really putting their heart and soul into this whole weekend. That they're doing wonderful things. Let me get that up there right. They're doing wonderful things to encourage novice operators, and especially some of the gear that they use. So we'll see you with all of that. That's just going to be great. So I think I'm finished here. I'm going to see what happens on 75 meter AM, but I'll be back after a while perhaps. But thanks very much. to the ARRL, W1AW, and especially Steve. We should have him back on, Gordo, and have him explain what all that stuff is that he's got behind. That'd be pretty good, don't you think?
Oh, yeah, that was a wall fall, both with Bob set up at W1AW and Steve Shack. Did you see that variac? The dial was like this large, Bob.
We need to do that. Oh, golly. Well, let's see if George got into the scene. If so, George, why take it away and let's see what you got for us. I bet you got some AM gear we could push a button and make go on AM, don't you, George?
Well, I've actually got some on AM right now. It's not here in the shack, though. But, I'd like to come. Well, I have a Collins 20V3 that I just need to bring home and start the conversion on. But I hadn't got on that yet. But I do get my daily recommended minimal amount of AM radiation because I take care of three of them. That old BC1 there, Bob, that is the only transmitter that has ever knocked me unconscious yet. So
Was it total? I mean, were you laying on the floor?
Yes, I was laying on the floor. I woke up and I had three little holes right here in the palm of my hand, and I didn't know where they came from. And then I got to looking around, and there was also a hole in the knee on my blue jeans. I had the side panel off of it. You know, it's common in some of these old transmitters when the big iron in the bottom, say the modulation transformer or reactor or the plate transformer go bad, sometimes they'll short to the metal chassis or the coil form of the transmitter or the transformer. And when it shorts, of course, you know, the thing just shuts down. So people will stick wood blocks down there and put the transformer up on top of it as a temporary to keep it on the air. And, you know, you should replace that, but they hadn't on this one. And I'd accidentally leaned down and my knee hit the corner of that thing. And there were three little holes on the side of the transmitter. That's the three holes I had here. And the one in the blue jeans on my knee, that's where I bumped into the transformer down there. So,
You don't have any of those problems with your ICOM gear, right? None.
I never have yet. No, not at all. And
okay. You know,
no wood blocks in there. Well, we're going to be back in just a few minutes here. But speaking of ICOM, we've got a message from them, Bob.
Create your own band opening with the IC9700. ICOM's newest SDR transceiver, the IC9700, is coming soon. This new radio is bringing direct sampling to the UHF-VHF weak signal world. The IC9700 all-mode transceiver is loaded with innovative features, such as dedicated amateur satellite operation, color touchscreen, built-in D-Star capability, RF direct sampling on 2 meters and 70 centimeter bands, dual independent receivers capable of full duplex operation as well as dual watch, 100 watts maximum output power on 2 meters, 75 watts max on 70 centimeters, and 10 watts max on 1.2 gigahertz. Visit ICOMAmerica.com/amateur for more information on all the great ICOM radios.
Attention all hams!
ICOM knows that ham clubs play a big role in bringing ham communities together to learn from their peers and industry leaders. As a way to give back and help you on your mission, ICOM has launched a promotion exclusively for U.S. ham clubs and the ham fests they're involved with. By registering your club, you could win ICOM swag, a Skype presentation for your club, or your ham fest, an ICOM booth setup. Register today for your chance to win at ICOMAmerica.com/hams.
And you can tune in and enter to win after each episode of Ham Nation. Go to ICOMAmerica.com/HamNation and sign up. You could win in the weekly grand prize drawing for T-shirts and hats and swag, and you'll automatically be entered in the monthly grand prize drawing for a new radio. For February, that radio is the ICOM ID4100A, entry-level D-Star mobile with big rig features, dual band, one band at a time. It does analog and D-Star, of course. Upgraded user interface, a greatly upgraded user interface, built-in GPS included, DVFast data mode, near repeater search function, micro SD card slot for voice and data storage, and there's an optional Bluetooth board available, and there's Android and iOS apps as well. So go to icomamerica.com/hamnation after this and each episode of Ham Nation and register to win. Sign up, good luck, and don't forget to follow ICOM America Inc. on Facebook and Twitter. And Gordo, what have you got in your short shots for us this week?
Okay. Well, first of all, a huge thanks for the American Radio Relay League. Every month, the terrific QST magazine. I mean, that's worth all that you would pay for membership, plus all that the ARRL does in promoting all aspects of ham radio, including AM radio. Well, let's head back to 12 volts DC and see what's happening out there in RV land, as well as those of you that have a solar panel on your roof. Well, solar panels output anywhere from 18 to 22 volts open circuit. And that's what advertisers announce when they give their computations as to how many watts the panel will put out, how many amps it will generate for charging. And that's all good as long as it's a great connection to get from the solar panel to whatever you're charging. And in this case, we monitored a panel with nothing tied into it, a little above 22 volts. But as soon as we went ahead and tied in the appropriate battery, it went from 22 to 14 to 12.7 and stayed right there at 12.7. until the battery voltage began to build with sunlight on the solar panels. Well, as you all know, the sun doesn't shine at all times, so you want to make sure and always keep track of how your radio is performing. And one good way is both a voltmeter to look at the voltage of the battery as well as a current meter. But if you monitor the current and the voltage near the panel, you may have a false indication that your battery is getting a good charge. And at the Orlando Hamcation, HamSource was there, John and his whole team. Let me tell you, HamSource has the very latest in equipment to monitor solar panel voltage and current and distribution. And in fact, such a broad showing that page 111 of the DX Engineering catalog all the way through 115 has plenty of their products. That's my favorite. Well, this is not my favorite, and that's the voltage panels wiring that I sometimes find when I'm doing shipboard inspections. That's pretty nasty wiring. And many times I'll see a solar panel that is supposed to put out 5 or 6 amps, but it's putting out only a measly 1 amp on a sunny day. And I'm thinking, what's going on? Well, when I see this down at the battery source, I know that probably I can put my hand over all that red goo, and it's going to be quite warm from just the current and the voltage getting lost as a yucky circuit. Now, to see the little tiny fuses there right next to the battery, this is good to prevent from an accidental short. But on this particular battery, it was not getting really a full charge from the panel, yet the panel was showing that it was doing its thing at the panel itself. So I took apart the fuses. Oh, is that ugly? Well, I threw that one away. Got some new fuses. I always like to sort of burnish them with a nail file to make sure that they're going to be nice and clean. I really prefer the automotive stereo industry fuses because they're gold-plated contacts. And I sometimes worry about the fuse. See it down there at the bottom that's feeding that distribution of battery one or battery two. And even sometimes those big battery switches, if you don't use them a lot, can generate a little bit of resistance. Well, to minimize any little generation of resistance, at Quartzfest, we put our BioNO 100-amp-hour battery right next to the radio, and we monitor the voltage as we do here when we were doing the AM with the Bendix Marine radio, and all was good. But we want to make sure that we're not losing connections. And one of the areas that we lose good connections and resistance to develops. So the voltage from the panel shows high. That's right. The voltage actually shows high because it doesn't see a load because of resistance in the line. So we always encourage good Anderson connection techniques. And we usually swedge them. Sometimes I've soldered them, but I prefer the swedge contact. Red, right, rear with the blades facing down. RRRD. Red, right, rear, when you're looking at the Andersons properly connected from the rear and the blades are down. There's a good pair of Andersons. And you want to make sure that you're going to go into a good Anderson connection system that's going to have a minimum current loss that would, again, drive up the voltage as seen on this particular meter from the voltage panel. Just the way you wouldn't think of it, the more loss that you have, the higher the apparent voltage is looking because it's not getting to the battery as the load. Well, we see a lot of different panels coming in from sources all over, source names that you would not recognize. And when we see these panels and we see some broken connections, we know that not all distribution panels with the Anderson connectors are created equal. In fact, when we went to pull off the top red and black connectors, the whole connector just pulled out from the panel itself. Well, that caused me to look into this going, what the heck's going on with these panels? And no, you don't solder them from the top. They get soldered from the bottom. And it's not really exotic pins that they're using. This appears to be just copper wire, maybe with some aluminum over it. But what occurs is they, when yanked on or jiggled, pull out of the poles that are here on the printed circuit board. Yeah, to the left, we got a good positive and a good negative connection. But in the middle of the screen, you're going to see that the connections are not all that great. And this is where we encourage all of you that work at component level on the bench, get a good pair of magnifiers and get ready. So we put the connectors for the Andersons back in, and we then give them a little bit of solder. And before I do the solder, I try and use, I've got rosin soldering flux. I put flux around each one of those connections, hit it with a good hot soldering iron. Sometimes on some of these panels, I'll even use a soldering gun. You want to get it hot enough so that touching the wire, you see it go over there to the pad and that the pad is well soldered. And then cautiously, be careful. When you snip those little bits off on the bottom side of the circuit board, they become airborne, and that can ruin a good eye. So make sure you always have something that's going to catch this, and be cautious because you don't want any one of these little metallic things floating around. So now you see we've got it properly soldered back to the panel, but then we got a problem with some of the import panels with no name. Not the quality panels that DX Engineering and others have, but stuff that is migrating in Me Too. And we find that the fuse holders are just barely held on with a little bit of solder on the bottom side. And many times the metals they're using are not compatible with the fuses that we're using. And after a while, they begin to develop a little bit of corrosion. So you pull out the fuse and you get things fixed up. Be cautious when you put the new fuse in, because if you don't get it straight down, it's going to skeeter off to the right. It's going to drop inside. And now you've got to get out your Phillips screwdriver and take the whole mama panel apart to get that errant fuse, a little one amper, out of the innards. Here's the Rig Runner. And again, I really love the Rig Runner units. They're advertised, of course, in DX Engineering that sells them, because they're really quality. And they even give you an LED if you should burn out one of the fuses and you don't really need to search for which one went. This I like. It's a no-brainer connection for Andersons, and there's little to go wrong with a setup like that. And what you're looking for, of course, is when you plug in and have all your batteries lined up, you're getting about 13.8 to 14.0 volts. But if you're seeing on your voltmeter near the panel 15 or 16 volts, don't think, wow, this panel's really working. It isn't. It's giving you maybe a half an amp instead of the 4 or 5 amps, and it's simply going to a bad connection, and the bad connection does not provide a low path of current to the battery, so it acts like a high resistance. The higher the resistance, the higher the apparent voltage looks coming from the panel. So be sure and use the proper tools for switching your connectors. I love Andersons. Not on a cold morning, because they're a mama to try and work with cold fingers. And you folks on the East Coast with all the storms, you know what that's like. So live with Andersons, but watch the voltage. And your most accurate voltage check is right at the battery terminals, whether they're lithium iron phosphate from BioNO, or AGMs, or even wet cell batteries. Check your charging current right there at the battery, and that will detect whether or not that distant voltage coming out of the solar panel is meeting up with a little bit of resistance. And for solar panels, including the little ones, the trickle charger ones, you want zero resistance for maximum charging current. Gordo, WB6NOA, back to George and ICOM America. George?
Well, Gordo, great information there, and I'll say, yeah, that 12 volts is a lot safer than working around a few kilovolts. If I have my choice, I'll go with the lower voltage anytime.
Roger that.
But yeah, good point there. If your voltage is reading a little high, it's probably because there's not any load on it, or very little. Well, this week on Smoke and Solder, we've got a video Randy put together here. You know, we've been asking for your photos and descriptions on what it is that you're building. And so let's take a look at Show Us Your Project.
Hi, Randy, K7AGE, with another Show Us Your Project video with projects sent in by the Ham Nation viewers. We have a lot to cover. Let's get going. First up is a portable power box from Mike, AB0RR. He picked up this plastic box at his local container store, and it's built around a BioNO battery, their battery charger, and a solar panel. And he's added some power pole connectors, a cigarette lighter connector, a voltmeter, and he says this will run his HF rig for 3 to 5 hours without any issues. Nice job. Greg, KO6TH, has a 2010 Tesla Roadster, one of only about 2,500 ever built. He wanted to mount a VHF-UHF mobile radio in the car, but the car only offers up to 8 amps through its accessory 12-volt outlet. So he chose a Yaesu FT818 and was able to mount it on the side of the console, and he uses a Larson through-the-glass mount dual-band antenna. And Greg wanted to make as few modifications to the car as possible. Teamy OH7T, a Ham Nation viewer from Finland, is also building a portable power package, but he's spending the winter testing out various power pole connector assemblies, charging systems, wiring in his battery, and seeing that it's going to meet his demands. When he's happy with it and finish making modifications, he will then work on packaging it into a final case. Good idea. Johnny WJ0NF has built himself a heavy-duty 2.5 by 8 foot workbench, starting with 4 by 4 inch posts, and the top surface is built out of 5/4 inch tongue and groove pine covered with 5/8 OSB board, which he says he can replace when it gets drilled upon, burnt, and stained. On the walls, he uses a French cleat system, which allows him to move his shelves and adjust them as needed. He liked the bench so well, he built himself a second one. Well done, Johnny. Rich K9WWW picked up a used Alliance HD73 rotor. Looking at the manual to see how it comes apart, he decided to strip it down, clean it, and have all the parts powder coated. He said it wasn't very difficult. He took his time and took lots of pictures to make sure he could reassemble it back the way it was. It looks really nice now with all the powder-coated pieces, and he's looking forward to turning his new hex beam with it. He says it operates quiet and smoothly. Gene, N8YRF, has started on a pine board project. He's in the process of collecting parts. He says he's had a couple of the tubes. He tore apart a scope to get a tube socket, and he's ordered some parts. It looks like he's got his chipstick ready to go. He's picked up his, looks like pine boards from Hobby Lobby, and he's got them all stained and finished. So looking forward to seeing progress from Gene on his pine board transmitter. Charles KC9YNL says you can use expired license plates to make tool holders. He can bend them up, and he says bending the edges over will make them stronger, and to make sure you file down the edges so you don't cut yourself. Add some stick-on rubber feet to keep it from sliding around and to protect your surfaces. The two-tiered holder will be for his pliers, cutters, and screwdrivers. He says small shielded boxes can be made from popcorn tins bought at Christmas time or old paint thinner cans. He says the corners solder very well. He also uses snap-in standoffs to hold the circuit boards and small rubber grommets or feed-through capacitors for wire egress. Lots of nice tips, Charles. Thanks. Ellen, K5ABL, has been working on a four-port directional coupler for an FM exciter application. This is his second-generation PC board, which he says doesn't work as good as his first prototype printed circuit board milled on a CNC machine. So he's learning a lot about layout and stray capacitance and such. So he provided me with a very extensive email talking about this. But if you're interested in it, you can contact him at his website. Gene, K4EKB, has been using what he calls a modest 3D printer along with Tinkercad software for various ham radio projects. He's building a Go box, so he needed a bracket to hold a voltmeter and a USB charger unit, so he printed one up. It has a nice little package. And if you're going to have a Go box, you probably have some fuses in there. So he printed up a nice little box to store spare fuses. It's pretty neat. He's also been busy printing push-to-talk handheld switches using arcade-style push-button switches of various sizes and shapes, including some desktop models where he's even printed in his call sign. And he's made some of these as gifts for his ham radio friends. He's also printed up some simple little brackets for microphone holders. And he has a Yaesu FTM 400, and when you remove the panel from it, it left the front of the radio kind of exposed, so he printed a dust cover. Really some neat 3D projects. Cool. Daryl W8DSB has sent along a club project from the Livingston County Amateur Radio Club. They've invested in a DMR repeater, and now to get the members on the air, they had a hotspot build project. So they built together 20 jumbo hotspots. So these are a few slides from the presentation with the steps involved to do putting the hardware together, and then you program up the hotspot software that resides on a Raspberry Pi. And there's also quite a few steps to the Raspberry Pi to get it up and running as well. Then you get to configure the radio using the CodePlug CPS software. And again, you got to get all these fields in exactly right. So when you get all done, they had 20 new hotspots fired up for their members to get on their their new DMR repeater. So thanks, Daryl, for sharing. And our last project tonight comes from Joe, KD2PPY. Joe's 13 years old, general class licensee, and he wanted to build an old school crystal radio based on designs from turn of the century books. One of the challenges is a high impedance headphone. He found that one. His grandfather had some copper wire to wind the coil, and he's just showing us a close-up here of the how small the wire was. And he had some resistors from an Arduino kit of parts. And he talked to his teacher at school who had some of these old clips, and he gave him some of those for the radio. He used a germanium diode. And here he is winding the coil in a PVC form. It took him about an hour. He mounted it all onto a pine board and has this adjustable tuning piece of wire going across the coil. And when he tried it out, he tied an antenna to the closet door and used a garbage can for his ground. And it actually worked and picked up some static. And again, the designs from turn of the century. He did not use any modern things like YouTube to learn how to build this. He took it outside, connected it to a ground rod and a wire, and was just amazed at how well it worked. And I know many of us spent many hours in our youth listening to crystal radios. Well done, Joe. Thanks for sharing. So that wraps up Show Us Your Projects for tonight. We had a lot of really neat projects. I really enjoyed the bending up of the license plate, the club project of building hotspots, Joe building his crystal radio, the 3D printing, power boxes, just a lot of good projects. So please send in some photos and a description of what you've been building. Send it to me, Randy, and it's k7age@outlook.com. So looking forward to seeing your projects. 73.
Well, thanks for putting all that together, Randy, and thanks to everyone who contributed. Some nice projects there. I really wish I had a 3D printer and even more the time to learn to use one. That's what's holding me back from getting one, because that's some nice custom pieces there that you can cut out, I would say, fairly easy. I don't know, because I haven't done it yet myself. Well, if you're looking for something to do Friday night, we'll be shooting the next Ham College at live.amateurlogic.tv. Join Professor Thomas and Dean Martin over there at 8 Central, 0200 UTC. And we got some things to learn you. All right, that'll do it for me this week. 73, I will see you back here again next week. And now here's Don.
Hey, good stuff all around. Really good stuff from Randy. Nice to have Randy back on the show. There's some good projects in there. Very, very nice. And you know where you can find some nice stuff, if you need like pieces, parts and stuff for your Go Kit or pretty much anything. Well, that's DX Engineering. And, you know, we like DX Engineering. And of course, the ham radio season is just around the corner, and now's the time to get your station ready, whether you're, you know, kit stuff or just spiffing up the joint. And DX Engineering makes it easy to order antennas and towers, as well as replacement parts and accessories for your existing tower. DX Engineering offers American Tower Company galvanized steel sections, bases, brackets, and accessories. Amorite brand towers work well in self-supporting guide or bracketed installations. DX Engineering is also an authorized Rhone distributor. Of course, that's the first name in ham radio towers, it seems like. Rhone means you get access to the entire Rhone line, like the legendary 25G, 45G, and the big boy 55G galvanized steel towers. They're all available, plus telescoping masts, base plates, guy wire, tower hardware, and more. TBX towers let you build an affordable self-supporting stamped steel tower, perfect for spaces that maybe can't accommodate a guide tower. And DX Engineering is now proud to offer self-supporting aluminum tower packages from Universal Towers, featuring heavy wall tubing legs and welded S bracing for years of dependable service. And here's something new. DX Engineering is the exclusive North American dealer for Hummelmasten's Mini XL Tower. With a name like Hummelmasten, you know it comes from Germany. 29.5-foot Mini XL features a unique crank-up two-tier carriage system that mounts both a rotator and a mast bearing. The Mini XL can be mounted high on a wall to give the height of the antenna above the roof. Also, wall and ground mount versions have tilt-over features for easier antenna adjustments. And it's just fun to say, Hummelmasten. You can also boost station performance with an HF Yagi antenna from DX Engineering. The lineup includes DX Engineering's own 20, 15, 10-meter Skyhawk and 17 and 12-meter Skylark rugged E-antenna Yagis and more than 65 OptiBeam antennas. New from OptiBeam, the OB10 5MP. It's 20 through 10-meter 5-band 10-element Yagi. It's been engineered for exceptional performance. Many popular OptiBeam models are in stock and ready for fast shipment. Spring's right around the corner, so start getting your tower projects ready. And DX Engineering, you know, ships faster than anybody else in the industry. If you get your ground shipping order in by 10 p.m. Eastern, and if it's in stock, it'll be on a truck headed your way tonight. Proven products and expert advice, DX Engineering helping you shrink the globe. Request your catalog. Shop online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. At dxengineering.com/hamnation. And, of course, we appreciate DX Engineering for their support here of Ham Nation. Let's go ahead and get into the news of the week now, and we'll have a solar update from Dr. T as well here from Amateur Radio Newsline. From Amateur Radio Newsline report number 2156, these are the Ham Nation headlines for Wednesday, February 27th, 2019. We're back on the ocean journey of Gene Socrates, VE0JS, a record-setting Canadian YL who is sailing around the world with her amateur radio.
Jan Socrates, VE0JS, is crossing time zones and setting records. Amateur Radio Newsline caught up with Jan back in our report last November as the 76-year-old retired mathematics teacher was partway through her solo sail around the world aboard her yacht, the SV Nerida. It's not her first. She is already the oldest woman to sail solo, non-stop, unassisted around the world. When she completes her journey, as she hopes to do this year, that hope for homecoming in Victoria will make her the oldest person of either gender to accomplish the solo journey. Back in November, she was north of Ducie Island, where Newsline spoke with her on the air with the help of a Skype phone patch. As in the middle of this month, she was past Cape Horn and Cape Agulhas and aiming in the direction of Australia and New Zealand. Jan is keeping in good contact with other hams on the radio. She is also uploading posts to her blog, svnerida.com. On her post of Friday the 15th of February, she noted she had sailed, not surprisingly, into the next time zone. And with luck, at the end of her journey of many months, she'll also sail into history. For Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Graham Kemp, VK4BB.
There are new compliance rules in effect from the FCC, but they don't necessarily pertain to radio. Newsline anchor Paul Brown, WD9GCO, explains.
In the U.S., the Federal Communication Commission's Enforcement Bureau has reminded electronics retailers that as of the 15th of February, there are new compliance requirements for devices known as unintentional radiators. These are defined as devices that transmit RF signals not used for any communications purposes. The agency's announcement puts retailers on notice that it is now enforcing what is known as the Supplier's Declaration of Conformity Procedures and is also requiring certification. The FCC notes that devices subject to the supplier's declaration include, quote, equipment that does not contain a radio transmitter and contains only digital circuitry, such as computer peripherals, microwave ovens, industrial, scientific, and medical equipment, switching power supplies, LED light bulbs, radio receivers, and TV interface devices. The agency noted that if equipment contained both types of radiators, the unintentional radiator needs to be authorized under either the SDOC or certification, and the intentional radiators, such as transmitters, require certification.
Skill and inventiveness in the fields of engineering and science are the hallmarks of modern maker fairs, and there's one coming soon to Cincinnati, Ohio.
The Cincinnati Mini Maker Fair has announced the 2019 date. The fair returns to the Cincinnati Museum Center at the restored Cincinnati Union Terminal for one day only on Saturday, April 13th from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. The Ukiah Amateur Radio Society hosted a booth last year and was very successful. If you're interested in volunteering to man the booth, please contact Ceci at kd8oob@gmail.com. Covering your amateur radio news in the greater Cincinnati area and the Commonwealth of Kentucky, this is Jack Prindle, AB4WS, normally in Big Bone, Kentucky, but this week tuning in from sunny Clearwater, Florida.
Maker fairs are extremely popular with youth interested in STEM, and that brings us to the opening of the nominating period for the 2019 Bill Pasternak WA6ITF Youngham of the Year Award. Nominations begin March 1st and run through the month of May. Everything you need to know can be found on the Newsline website, arnewsline.org, under the YHOTY tab. The award will be presented in August at the Huntsville Hamfest in Alabama. And that's all from the Amateur Radio Newsline, your independent source for amateur radio news for four decades and counting at arnewsline.org. With Graham Kemp, VK4BB, Paul Brown, WD9GCO, Jack Prindle, AB4WS, Karen Eve Murray, KD2GUT at the News Desk in New York, and our news team across the globe, I'm Don Wilbanks, AE5DW. 7-3. We'll see you next time here on Ham Nation. Now here's the solar update with Dr. Tamitha Scove, WX6SWW.
The sun launches a solar storm that looks like it's just barely going to miss Earth, but we could still feel some effects. Along with a coronal hole that's going to be sending us some fast wind here in the next day or two, and we could be in for some serious solar storming. Those stories and more in the news this week. Space weather this week gets very exciting. First, we have a massive coronal hole that's going to be rotating into the Earth's strike zone here in the next couple days, and it'll be sending us some fast solar wind. But that's not all. If you look at this, ready? Whoosh! Did you see that? That's a solar storm being launched. I almost forgot what they look like. It's been so quiet lately. Now, that solar storm looks like it's been launched to the west of Earth, so it'll miss us, but we might actually feel some wake effects. Along with the fast solar wind from this coronal hole means we could get some extended storming over the next couple days with that combined effect, and we might even see aurora drop to mid-latitudes. Switching to your M-flare threat meter, you can see we continue to be extremely low when it comes to the X-ray flux, and therefore, by proxy, the solar flux continues to be low. Now, we do have a bright region on the Earth-facing disk right now, but it is rotating to the sun's backside, and we're hardly hanging on to marginal propagation as it is. And unfortunately, that may actually tank for the next 3 to 5 days, maybe even a week, before things begin to pick back up again when a new region rotates into Earth view. Now, switching to your solar storm conditions, you can see the last time we actually had any activity was back around the 21st. This is from a small pocket of fast wind, and it bumped us up to active conditions over a few days before things begin to settle down. It did manage to bring us a little bit of aurora to high latitudes, but once again, you mid-latitude aurora photographers, you missed out. Since then, things got quieter and quieter, and now we're pretty quiet, but it won't last because we're waiting on that fast solar wind that should be hitting us any time now, and it could easily bump us up to active, possibly even storm levels over the end of February and maybe even into the first couple days of March before things begin to quiet down. So mid-latitude aurora photographers, get ready. You might actually have a chance with this one to see some aurora. Switching to our solar storm conditions and aurora possibilities over the coming week, we are anticipating the hit from that fast solar wind along with the glancing blow from that solar storm that has been launched to the west of Earth, and we could easily get to storm levels. At high latitudes, NOAA is expecting minor storm conditions with up to about a 55% chance of a major storm. At mid-latitudes, we are expecting minor storm conditions, but not until the 28th, with only about a 5% chance of a major storm. Most likely won't get there, but we could see some aurora down to mid-latitudes for a short while on the 28th, and then things will begin to calm down, but it could easily lead us into the beginning of March before things get quiet again. Switching to your solar flare and particle radiation storm outlook over the coming week, everything is in the green when it comes to big flares. We have no risk for radio blackouts right now, which should make you GPS users on Earth's day side very happy. Your GPS reception should look fantastic. Now, we do have a bright region that is rotating off of the sun's west limb, and it has managed to keep the solar flux up into the low 70s right now, but it probably will dip into the 60s, which means we're going to go into poor radio propagation over the next couple days before the new region on Stereo's backside actually rotates back into Earth view and boosts that solar flux up a little bit. Now, also because we are at solar minimum, we are getting a bigger impingement of cosmic rays than we normally would. So you frequent flyers, and this does include you air crew who fly over 800 hours annually and fly at high latitudes and high altitudes, you are in the marginal range for radiation dose, and this does include prenatal passengers. So pregnant women, please take this into consideration in your flight plans. So the space weather this week looks very exciting. Not only do we have the fast wind from that coronal hole that has rotated into the Earth strike zone, and we could be feeling its effects as soon as the 27th, but we also have that solar storm that launched just to the west of Earth. Now, it won't actually hit Earth, but it could combine some effects with that fast solar wind and intensify that solar storm starting around the 28th. See aurora photographers, keep your batteries charged. We could actually see aurora clear down to mid-latitudes this time. Now, as far as amateur radio and shortwave radio responders go, well, right now we're kind of dealing with marginal radio propagation, but things could get worse before they get better. We could drop down to poor radio propagation on Earth's day side before that bright region from stereo's backside rotates back into Earth view and boosts up that solar flux. Plus, we've got this solar storm to contend with on Earth's night side, so you may have some dicey radio propagation easily over the next few days. Now, as far as you GPS users are concerned, well, your reception on the day side should look fantastic. There shouldn't be any problems there. But we do have that solar storm to contend with on Earth's night side over the next couple days, so make sure you stay away from the dawn dust terminators and away from aurora, and your reception should be pretty good. I'm Tamitha Scove. Thank you for watching.
Always good stuff from Dr. T. Remember, if you're not following her on Twitter, you really should be, at Tamitha Scove. And speaking of shortwaves, you mentioned that. So I'd like to say hello to our listeners at WTWW tonight, 5085 and 15.810, and a lot of ham radio programming, a lot of great programming just in general on WTWW. So check it out. And if you'd like to email them, they're always there. Email at WTWW.us. Again, it's email at WTWW.us. And you don't even have to have a shortwave receiver. You can listen right there online, right there at the website that Victor just put up. Good stuff. And really excited about opening day of the Amateur Radio Newsline Young Ham of the Year Award nominating period. That's coming up on Friday the 1st. And we're doing something different this year. We've always accepted mail-in nominations. We're no longer doing that. Everything will be electronic. Everything will be done via email, because basically it's just it's a hassle to mail all these packets, make copies of them, and mail them all to our judges, or scan them, or whatever we need to do. So they're all going to be electronic. Some of these packets are literally dozens of pages long. So just some amazing information about amazing youth. And so we're doing it all online via email. And everything you need to know is there at the YHOTY tab at ARNewsline.org. So check that out beginning on Friday. Yep, right there. If you click on that, you'll probably see information from last year's winner. As soon as the new newscast goes up, probably tomorrow or certainly by Friday, you will see the nominating form on that link right there, the YHOTY tab. And Bryant's been a great representative of the Young Hams of the Year. Proud to call him a friend. Amanda, I'm proud to call you friend too, but you're kind of goofy.
We're shady. That's all I can
but
say.
But I say that in the most loving and complimentary way. Yeah, we were texting back and forth some questionable ham radio related material earlier that we'd love to share with you, but Leah would probably get mad.
Yeah, or our viewers would be offended. One of the two.
Both.
Probably. Oh, yeah. So. Okay, so changing the subject wildly here.
Yes.
And I want to just talk about first some shortwave, since you guys are mentioning shortwave. There's this club called the National Radio Club. I don't know if any of you have ever heard of it, but basically there's quite a few hams that belong to it, and I print their newsletter. And I'm not trying to, you know, like sell anything here, but this is a very interesting club, because if you are a shortwave listener, they have all of these reports. They print this newsletter every month, actually twice a month. And it mentions all of the AM, FM radio stations that you're hearing from your house. And usually it's like worldwide, and you hear the DX radio stations as well. So check that out if that's something that you're interested in. Join up with them and report what you hear. Also, you know, you can do those cool SWL cards, kind of like your QSL cards, and you can send them to the radio stations that you hear. And also they report on pirate stations, which is pretty interesting. It's a, you know, it's usually just this little 24-page little half-page booklet. And I think you guys would find it interesting if you looked it up and see what it's about. All right. my first question, this was actually for Bob, but I'm going to send it to Gordo. Because Gordo, you're good with some AMer stuff. Okay. Bill WZ1L says he's a bit confused about the AM mode. He tried to call CQ during the AM rally, but ended up going to stations that were on the air. And for some reason, I was trying to zero beat the stations. He says, is there something he's doing wrong?
In the AM mode, usually the stations are so loud and clear that with a VFO, you rocket left and hear the left lower side band to the right, the upper side band, and then bring it down to about the middle. Tune them in so that they sound normal without a lot of scratchiness. The tone of their voice will not change like on single sideband, but the clarity. If you tune smack dab on their carrier, and most stations were running full carrier on that weekend, as I noted, you'll have minimum noise and be able to hear both sides of the sideband in the double sideband mode. So zero beat is going to where the noise is at a minimum because the transmitted carrier of the other station is shutting down the noise, and their sidebands, both upper and lower on double sideband AM, that's where the intelligence of the transmission is. Hope that made sense.
It did to me. Bill, I hope it helps you out as well. Thank you, Gordo, for that question or answer. Let's see, George, it was mentioned in the chat room and you did address it, but to everyone that's going to be listening tomorrow or on the podcast or something, it was mentioned that you didn't talk about this week's question or last week's answer.
Yeah, I didn't have a winner last week. You know, I talked about the difference between an average responding and a true RMS voltmeter. And then, you know, I discussed it. And then I asked at the end, how would a DC voltage compare on an average responding voltmeter as opposed to a true RMS voltmeter? Most people answered it would read the same on both because it's DC, which is sort of true, but no one really had the right answer, which is, in my experience, and I did try it to verify, you can't measure a DC voltage with an AC voltmeter. So,
good point.
Nobody really had that right, which kind of surprised me.
All right. Well, you know, don't send out those trick questions and maybe we'll get them right. Just saying. Let's see. What else do we have tonight? This is kind of a standard question, and we ask it occasionally, but what is your go-to normal use HF antenna? Don, I'll start with you.
I have been using off-center fed dipoles for a while. Ever since the first time I the first time we used one at field day many, many years ago, it was an 80-meter off-center fed dipole. It was the Carolina Wyndham, actually. And used that for a long time, and then I upgraded. I consider it an upgrade anyway, just me personally, to the radio waves. I've got an 80-meter and a 160-meter off-center fed dipole. And that's the beauty about wire antennas is, you know, they're very easy to put up. Anybody can, you know, throw some wire through the tree. And it doesn't have to be put up exactly perfectly. It just has to be put up. You know, you can be low to the ground. Mine are very low to the ground, much too low to the ground. But yet, you know, I've worked the world with them. So that's any type of a wire antenna are going to be pretty much my favorite go-to. And what I like to have a big log periodic sitting up on, 100-foot tower, of course I would. But right now I'm working wires, and they're working just fine.
Wires are good. They're always good. We always have our go-to G5RV, and helps us work 80 meters, not necessarily 160. But, hey, it's a fun time. Gordo, same question.
I too have an off-center fed Wyndham made by Radio Waves. Emmett and his wife, and his wife is recovering. She had a little medical problem, and we're all just, Emmett, we're hoping for her fast recovery. And the kids are doing great. They continue to upgrade the quality of the wire jacket, the quality of everything that they're doing with these wire off-center fed antennas. And I also use, as you do, Amanda, one of the Cushcraft A3, I guess it's the A4, as a beam. But you know, more times than once, I'll be on the wire antenna on an alternate radio, and I hear almost the same amount of signal. Not near as strong, but I can still hear it out of the noise. So I encourage new hams, as Don was indicating, get started with a simple off-center fed Wyndham. Most of the HF radios with a built-in automatic tuner can tune up the off-center fed Wyndham on the bands that it was designed for, the ham bands. And for off the ham bands, I do Coast Guard auxiliary work on below 5 megahertz 60 meter channels. I find that an LDG tuner, and here on Ham Nation, you're going to be hearing a lot more about LDG. The LDG tuner just tunes it up like a snap, anywhere from 3 to 30 megs. Back to you, Amanda.
Let me touch on G5RVs for a sec, because Gordon brought it up. G5RV is kind of, I think, the Rodney Dangerfield of the wire antenna. They get no respect. And let me tell you something. I started with a G5RV, and they're great antennas for what they are. I've worked a bunch of good DX on a G5RV. Now, once I upgraded to an off-center fed dipole, my output went way up. I was able to contact more. In fact, a funny story, I used to run a G5RV here at our place in Picayune was a weekend place when we still lived in New Orleans. And I used to hang out with, there were some guys on 80 meters. I used to call them the audio guys. They call themselves the Rack Pack. You may have heard of these guys. I can't remember any call signs off the top of my head, but they all ran hi-fi audio. They all ran, outboard broadcast type rack mounted audio gear for that wide, thick hi-fi signal that Bob doesn't like so much because it's not as articulate. But anyway, be that as well, I used to hang out with those guys, and 100 watts on my little G5RV. And when I put up that 160 meter Carolina Wyndham, they swore up and down that I had bought an amplifier. That's the difference that it makes. But if you've got 102 foot, like a small lot, you can put a G5RV up, and it's going to be better than an attic antenna. Maybe not quite as good as an off-center fed, especially on 80 or 160. But you can work the world on a G5RV. A lot of people have done it. So don't be afraid, and don't talk bad about G5RVs. That's a great antenna.
Oh, it is. And the expert tip here, y'all, sounding like Don, a lot of times we will listen on one antenna and transmit on the other. So try two different ones. I mean, you never know what you're going to hear or be able to transmit with. And it really makes sense if you're really trying to make that contact and it's some DX and you can barely hear them on one antenna, switch to the other one and just keep switching.
Yeah.
That's right. And work them on one and listen on the other if that's what it takes. George, same question.
Well, for VHF and UHF, I use a pretty much what a lot of folks use, 18-foot collinear, fiberglass antenna, and I've used those for years. But for HF, I use Smoke and Solder Laboratories 80-meter loop, actually, the Ballon, I've got a one-to-one Ballon on it that we actually built here on Ham Nation a few years ago. And for everything above 80 meters, I use a 40-meter off-center fed dipole with, again, a Ballon that we built right here on Ham Nation, 4-to-1 Ballon. And, that's always performed pretty well for me. I have, and I don't have it up, actually, it's sitting on sawhorses in the backyard. I've got to get a rotor, and I'm going to put it up as a MFJ hex beam. And I used that at field day this past year, and I really liked it. So I'm looking forward to getting that up. And I also have one of the MFJ cobweb antennas that we've used at Field Day for the last couple of years, too. For a compact antenna, that has done really well. Of course, you know, it doesn't go down to 80 meters, and the one I've got won't go down to 40 meters. But for a small antenna, that's been good. So, yeah, all wire antennas here.
All right. Well, I really like our 40-meter loop. We've tried several, and I always thought it was more quiet than the G5RV and your OCFs. But it's not tuning up right now. It has a problem. I think it's a bad patch cable, so we got to fix that. Anyhow, all right, those are our questions for tonight. We're going to go ahead and wrap this up. We've had an awesome amount of information and some great visitors on the show tonight. So let's talk about some nets. We have the D-Star net on 14 Charlie. We have the DMR net on TAC 311. And we have the 40-meter net on 7192 and 75 meters on... I'm trying to remember, 3906. So go out there, check out, see what you can hear, and check in. Thank you. Back to you. I don't know who's wrapping it up, but Don, you looked pretty snazzy in your Mardi Gras.
Yeah, we're 6 days away from Mardi Gras. Next Tuesday is actually Mardi Gras, so we are in the thick of it. The big Mardi Gras weekend is this weekend, so I'm wearing my purple, green, and gold Mardi Gras shirt. It's gaudy as it can be, but I actually like the colors. I like it. It looks good.
It's gaudy. So.
Yeah, well, Mardi Gras is a gaudy time of the year, and you got to love it. If you've never been to Mardi Gras, you got to come down. That's a bucket list thing. You got to do it once in your life, for sure. What else can I tell you tonight before we turn it over to George and Gordo to wrap things up? Don't forget, Young Ham of the Year Award nominating period begins on Friday, March 1st, runs through the end of May. And of course, we'll give away we'll present the Young Ham of the Year Award in August in Huntsville, Alabama. Got a good ham fest coming up, not this weekend, but next, the 7th and 8th, I believe it is, or 8th and 9th, whatever that Friday and Saturday is, in Cajun country. It's the Rain Ham Fest down there, Lafayette. That's the one with the Friday night fade au dos where they have the crawfish boil. George, you can probably find a rotor down there, and if not, hell, just come down for the crawfish. That's going to be a good one. Emmett from Radio Waves is usually up there. I'm hoping that Rochelle is feeling good enough to make that trip. I don't know. I haven't talked to him. I got to check in with them. But our friends from Maine Trading, I believe, are going to be there. It's always good to see those guys. And it's a friendly ham fest, so I highly recommend the Rain Ham Fest. Just look that up on the ARRL website or just Google Rain Ham Fest, R-A-Y-N-E, Rain Ham Fest. It's from the Frog capital of the world, George. You knew that, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I was there last year. It's the first and only time I've been. Had a great time. I don't know if I'll make it this year, but certainly a great ham fest. And one worth, if you can get to it, worth going to. Because you're not going to front a Friday night like that at any ham fest. Not even Dayton. No. If you've never had crawfish... It's a good place to experience, yeah. Which I never had. I'd never eaten it, but stuff. I did eat it down there and enjoyed it. You know, can't say I would throw out my shrimp for crawfish personally, but, a lot of people do.
Yeah. MFJ is going to be there, too. And today, by the way, is Martin Jew's 75th birthday from MFJ. So happy birthday to K5FLU, Martin Jew, the founder of MFJ, 75 years young. I don't know if he'll be there personally, happy but birthday. MFJ will be at the Rain Ham Fest. Happy birthday, Martin.
Yeah, Martin's a great guy and such a treasure to ham radio. He's done so many things and made so many products that never would have existed otherwise. So, yeah, congratulations, Martin. And if you're looking for something to do Friday night, join, as I mentioned earlier, Professor Thomas and Dean Martin for Ham College. live.amateurlogic.tv. And that's all I've got. So I will turn it over to Gordo because he's always got something in reserve there.
Also, don't forget about the DX contest.
That's right.
Yes.
Yep.
All right. Thanks, Amanda. And very best to all of you. We'll see you all next week. And now here's our wrap up.
I guess that'll do it for us. So we'll say goodnight. Thank you all for being here, and we'll see you again next Wednesday, the day after Mardi Gras, which is a pretty solemn day here in South Louisiana, anywhere where Mardi Gras is celebrated. So Ash Wednesday, that'll be next Wednesday. But it's always Ham Nation Wednesday, so we'll see you then. So good night, everybody. 7:30. Thanks for being here.